Hey, this is Joe Sanfilippo. You're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
Hey, it's Mistress Carrie, and you are listening to Studio 2009.
It couldn't have worked out better.
There is nothing wrong with your podcast player. Do not attempt to adjust the volume. Hello and welcome back into our studio. You are now inside Studio 2009. I am, of course, Tier 2 and Mike, and joining me once again, as always, is that good old detective, David Draper. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. Today we continue on in our sleuthing as we put on our trench coats and jump back in time with Columbo. These are the Columbo files here inside Studio 2009. As I mentioned in the last episode, and I will mention this in every episode, Tubi.tv is where the main online source that I am watching these, which puts them all in whatever order they're
It's the same order that they have on the DVDs. I think that's the particularly once we get out of the first season, it'll just be like the standard order.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And today it's, according to them, Season 1, Episode 2, and it's a ransom for a dead man. Dun, dun, dun.
Yes.
This one was, like, I almost didn't need to watch this. Because literally, I watched this, like, 3.5, 4.5 months ago. I remembered everything about this. And even though this episode and yesterday's episode, Prescription for Murder, that one was 94 minutes. This one was 92 minutes. This is only 2 minutes shorter than that one. This one felt like it went by faster.
Kind of, yeah.
The pacing didn't feel like a play.
It's more TV, less.
Yeah.
I mean, the original one, the Prescription Murders, is literally an adapted stage play. Whereas right. This one is more a TV show. I mean, yeah. It had a TV it.
Yeah. No, and I love it. I wanted to mention that I noticed the kind of changeover where you're right. And the other thing is teleplay. Yeah, I wrote this down, but it's here in Wikipedia. The teleplay was done by Dean Hargrove.
Yeah.
Now, the man from Uncle, Columbo, Matlock. I mean, this dude did he's the creator of Matlock.
I mean, I recognized the name. I didn't know he was a creator of Matlock, but that makes sense. I knew he was a guy that like did a lot of TV back in the day.
Yep. He worked on My Three Sons, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., The Name of the Game, Columbo, McCloud, Dear Detective, Perry Mason television films. Like I said, he's the creator of Matlock, Jake and the Fat Man, Father Dowling Mysteries. He created the Father Dowling Mysteries.
I think he adapted them. I think they were books. I might be wrong, but I believe they were books.
Right, yes, but I'm saying, like, American Mystery Television Series first aired from January 20th, 89 to May 2nd, 91. Series was preceded by the 87. Yeah, whatever. But the point is, according to this, it says that he created the TV series probably based on the books. He's not the creator of Diagnosis Murder, but he was a producer on that show, and as I mentioned in the last episode of the podcast yesterday, when we were talking briefly about Diagnosis, the next detective thing we're doing is Diagnosis Murder. I love that show. I freaking love that show. But yeah, so Ransom for a Dead Man. Leslie Williams, played by Lee Grant, a brilliant and ruthless lawyer, murders her husband, Paul, played by Harlan Ward, to get his money, arranging the act to look as if he had been kidnapped and killed by his captors.
Just say tennis, and I'll remember to put it on my office calendar. All right, Pat, goodbye.
Oh boy, this one. All right, let's see here. Notes, notes, notes. I like her, but man, she is like the definition of Black Widow.
Wow.
Like, well, I mean, you know.
Well, I mean, you're not wrong, because she murders her husband. And she's,
exactly.
I mean, it is established that she's the whole relationship was transactional from her perspective, that she was using him. And then when she couldn't use him anymore, she got rid of him.
Yep.
And she didn't just, like, take, like, she didn't just take his money. She took his daughter's money, too. Like, that was that was like the little twist of the knife was he has a daughter that she is like Margaret tweens or something. Like, she's not tweens. Like, teen, like she's in school, but she's probably played by like a young 20-something.
I would say that, well, she's off.
She's 70s/80s teenager. I'm putting that
way. So it's probably like senior in high school, almost in college kind of thing, but it really felt like to me like she was going to school across the pond. And
well, she was she was overseas. She was in Europe, and she comes home because of the murder. But but like there's a line about how like she like the killer like because of the crisis because the husband had been kidnapped, he's able to like break all these like whatever and like take all the money out of her. Out of the stepdaughter's funds, like just because I got to save your father.
Yep, absolutely. So the beginning. So what I noticed, and what I'm going to continue to notice, I don't remember who it was in this one, but in the last episode, in the first episode, it was Dave Grusin who did the music, and the music was so different in the first one than it is in here. But that beginning, oh my God, it was like screeching birds.
Yeah.
When she goes to kill him, the background music that swells up at a few points, I'm like, oh my God, when is this going to pass? Because I don't like this music. That's the only negative thing I have about this one, is that just kind of irritated me for a few moments. The first episode, as we mentioned, had rotary phones. This one has push-button phones. So you can clearly tell, like you've already said, they went from being in a play to being on TV, because
well, and the phones. I think part of it was also like they make a point about the phones are very for 1971 technologically advanced.
Yes.
This will come up in future episodes. You will see an episode that revolves around futuristic technology called a video cassette recorder to blow your mind. Okay. But yeah, the fancy techno phones are important to her whole fake ransom or fake kidnapping, and she uses the phones to stage a call from her husband using taped audio from previous calls clipped together.
Yep.
Me English good speak.
Yes. Columbo in the very beginning, it was not long before he was like literally, it wasn't 30 minutes until we saw him. It was like maybe 15.
Well, it opens, she's literally doing the ransom.
Yep.
So it's like ransom for a dead man. And then the husband comes home. She shoots him. And then she like goes through the whole process of like getting rid of the body. And as I said, in the previous episode, there's a little detail that you think she's going to miss. Cause there's a briefcase. He leaves his briefcase behind, but she gets that. And she kind of like sets up this whole thing where like he's been kidnapped on his way home. She just kind of abandons the car. She mails the ransom note. She dumps the body. And that was not a human body that she dumped down that cliff.
Oh, no.
That body was made by the same people who made the glass from the last episode. It was just, I don't know, it was styrofoam or something. It was super light.
Yeah.
I'm like, because I was doing something in my room watching that. And, like, I couldn't even get my chair to scoot across the floor. And I'm like, a human body would just, like, flump once and stay there. You got to, like, keep pushing it. And then, and then she's got the FBI helping her out with, like, the kidnapping. And then suddenly she opens the door and there's Columbo looking for his pen.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Williams. I lost my pen out here. Will you help me find it?
No, he didn't ask her to help her find it. Like, because she's offering to help. And he's like, no, it's fine. It's fine. I'll get a flashlight. Yeah. No, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah. I love Peter Falk. I love Columbo. He's such a great character. He's a character you have not seen in 50 or 60 years, because there's no characters in today's television landscape that are like him. And that's what's so refreshing to me about watching these episodes again. It's just so cool. And I love where I think it was Columbo that said it might have been some Mrs. Williams is a unique person.
he does say that.
Yeah.
And well, then, because she doesn't, when she quote talks to her husband on the phone, she doesn't ask him how he is.
Yep.
Which is that little detail that he catches real quick. It's like, that's strange that he didn't ask. If I'd been kidnapped, Mrs. Columbo would immediately want to know how I was doing, you know?
Yep. That helicopter scene, though, when she's flying that helicopter, that was, oh, man.
She flew a helicopter? I thought she flew a plane. I thought she flew a plane. Okay. Prop engine plane.
Yeah.
And no, because like, I remember that he was in the helicopter following them.
Yes, that's what it is. That's what it is. Scene where
he's running back to the helicopter and he kind of ducks. I'm like, ugh. Yeah. I know you don't like horror movies, but like,
I don't know.
The original Dawn of the Dead, man. Ever since I saw that, like, I've never flown in a helicopter and I don't want to get anywhere near them. I'm just like, they terrify me.
I've flown in a helicopter exactly once, and I was like 7 years old in 1987. My dad had helicopter lessons, and it was weird as hell, and I've never been in a helicopter since. But I love, as a flying machine thing, I love helicopters. Yes, you are correct. She was the one in the plane. I was just remembering them following her in the helicopter.
In the helicopters, yes.
So, yeah. So did the stepdaughter slap? There's a point in this after the helicopter scene, after the drop, after all that stuff. Did the stepdaughter slap her or punch Mrs. Williams? Because the scene where the stepdaughter hits her, I was like, oh,
slaps her.
Okay. Yeah. So I wasn't sure. Like, literally, I went back twice and I'm like putting on my glasses and squinting my eyes and like
it's 1971. She slapped.
No, I'm not complaining.
I'm not complaining. Yeah. I'm just saying that like the morals at the time, the attitudes at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like she did not close fist punch anybody.
See that's what I thought. Like I wasn't sure if it was a because that's a slap. That's a light slap. But literally, there's a difference between that and this kind of thing where you actually hit somebody in the face with a punch, and I wasn't sure what she did, but I was like, whoa, stepdaughter, yeah, yikes. And Columbo, it wasn't just Columbo, it was my dad, it was my mom, it was everybody, but Columbo in this episode, oh, it reminded me of why I always build time in and I always try to be early everywhere I go.
You know, I don't do it on purpose, but it always happens. Like, I never quite am able to properly anticipate how long it's going to take me to get somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I'm usually pretty early. I don't want to be late. I don't want to be one of those people that makes people wait.
Yep.
So nope. I'm usually early, and I you know, feel bad about that. I actually feel weird about that, but I get what Columbo's saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't ever feel weird about that, because the funny thing is, a month ago, by the time this airs, this will air December 12th, 2024. In November, I had two different doctor's appointments. And when I called because I don't drive, so when I called for transportation, I said, the appointment's at 9 a.m. We will pick you up at 8:20. I'm like, okay, cool. I got to the doctor's office, both appointments, like 45 minutes early. And they're like, people never come early. They're usually like either right on time or late. That's what they said to their offices. That's what they told me.
My mother made us go to doctor's appointments super early.
Exactly. Always.
And of course, every single time they were running late.
Yeah.
So it's like you get there early and then you got to wait past your time because because someone came in and blah, blah, blah. It's an emergency. It's important. It's like, well, I guess I'm not.
Doctor's offices is always hurry up and wait. You hurry up to get there to make sure you're on time or early, and then you're waiting on them, which is fine. That's the way it is. It is what it is. But I love that he said that about always getting everywhere early. When Columbo goes to the office and he runs into the other male attorney, and Columbo says to him, working for a woman, how do you do it? And
yes.
Like, I like doing it. She's the best trial attorney in the state. I was like, dang, Columbo.
just go hang out with Don Draper, smoke some cigarettes and drink some bourbon and do your madman thing, man. Like, it was. Yeah, I think that was the line that I remember going, whoa.
Yeah, that was a
whoa. Because he says, I could never work for a woman. I'm like, whoa, yeah, okay, Spunky.
Yep, that was a whoa line. But again, it didn't take me out. Again, we're noticing this stuff, folks, because for both of us, for me a second time on some of these early ones, but like I haven't seen Columbo in years. Like, I needed to wait until I came up with a plan. That's how I do my entertainment nowadays, is I come up with a plan to do a podcast about whatever it is. I don't care what it is. My wife counter number 7. I'm just counting them up as we go. So this is at number 7 at this point. Ball game. He mentions about the ball game. He also mentions about how his wife tells him, you're a warrior. And he goes on and Mrs. Williams, I am a warrior. I worry all the time. I've been worrying about shit my whole life. Like, so that's another thing. I'm like, okay. My wife, counter number 8, he says something about how she tells him how much of a pain he is at times.
That I think is a legitimate.
Yeah.
His wife probably did say that.
Yes, absolutely. Idiosyncrasy. Wonderful word. This is why I love this old TV stuff, because you hear words that you haven't heard in years, and that was a nice little scene. One more thing, counter number 6, he says it again, as always. That's a puzzler. I can't figure that one out yet when he's talking about various, like how the call thing was done. He hasn't figured out yet.
Yeah.
And then she takes him up in her airplane. Oh, God.
That was a nice scene. That is her intimidating him.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Very much so. And then when they get back on the ground, he goes through all these ideas, and she says a few ideas, and he goes, that's a crazy idea. Forget about it. The only negative I have with this is some of the visual effects on the scene changes. Right after that, when the wife or the daughter, the stepdaughter, might still have the keys, or no, it was like, would the husband still have the key? It was the keys to the thing.
The keys to the car, yeah.
Yeah, the keys to the car. So that was a fade out to go to commercial, and then a fade back in. It goes to the diner into Mrs. Williams. I didn't visually, my eyes, that hurt my eyes, because that was a weird fade out, fade into me. Again, it's a little nitpicky thing with my vision. It is what it is. But that really is the only negative I have for this. And just like earlier, when she slapped Mrs. Williams, this, I loved this. And this is where you were talking about him getting angry. She went to hit him. Columbo, young lady, don't you ever do that again.
He catches her arm.
Catches her arm. Yeah, but you know, if he hadn't done that, she would have smacked him hard. Lieutenant Columbo, fumbling and stumbling. I love the way Peter plays the character. It's so good. Every aspect, even though this is only the quote-unquote second time we're seeing him, and I know it's going to get better as it goes along, but everything he does. And the thing about this episode is, Mrs. Williams, she points out all this stuff to him. She literally tells him, you're this, 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 and this, and this. Well, and I was like,
the previous episode had done that too. He's like, oh, you're a shaggy little dog with your cigar and your coat, and you're just trying to trick me into a false sense of, a lot of the people Columbo goes after are kind of eventually figure him. It's funny because, you know, the story, the gloss on Columbo, the rap on Columbo is that he tricks people by being this way. But most of the people he goes after kind of figure him out before the end, like way before the end.
Yeah.
And in these early ones, they break it down. They're like, this is what you're doing. I get it. You're trying to like play this game with me.
But I like the way she broke it down more than the way that Ray broke it down.
Okay. Sure. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love the, here's looking at you, Mrs. Williams. I'm like, oh, you had to pull Humphrey Bogart out, didn't you? That was good. And at the end, his absent-mindedness. Would you mind if I just signed for this?
Oh, I love it. He owes her like $1.10 lounge.
Yeah.
And like, he's got this briefcase full of cash, which is the key evidence that gets her arrested. And he's like looking, he's counting the cash. He's looking at the cash, and the waitress comes up for like $1.50 or something.
Yeah.
It's $1 something. And he has no money on him, but he's got like hands full of cash. That is such a classic Columbo moment.
It's the classic Columbo moment because you don't know what he's going to do. Like, Oh, yeah, no, I know. He's going to come up with something, but, like, literally, when I was watching that scene, I'm, like, saying to myself as I'm watching, like, don't use the money in your hand. Don't use
the money. Oh, I knew he wasn't
going
to use it.
Like, I didn't think he was going. Yeah, I know. I know that's the joke. But, you know, yeah, sometimes.
And he didn't have a pen either.
Yeah,
he didn't have a pen to sign for it.
Yeah, he didn't have a pen to sign for it. And she had to come, the waitress had to come up with one.
There's that moment, and then there's an early, in the diner, there's a great moment between him and the chef. He gets the menu, and the chef goes, you look at that menu every time, and you always just order chili. And he's like, yeah, well, maybe today. I'll have the chili.
I'll have the chili. And it's the crackers that make the chili the best.
Yes. Like, that's one of those things that, like, people, like, everyone talks about the trench coat and the dog and the car, but he loves his chili. He will go get his chili every day.
Yeah, I love the trench coat. We're just now seeing
that car. Was his trench coat, by the way. Like, that was Peter Falk's trench coat that he brought from home.
And that's why it's so cool, is because it's something that the actor, it was a quote-unquote prop that the actor brought from his own, like, to make the, this is what makes Columbo authentic. This is what makes Columbo feel like it, like, when I am watching these episodes, when I watch these today, before the recording for this one and the other one the other day, whatever else, I felt like I was in a world that was separate from the actual real world we live in. And that's what entertainment is supposed to do. It's supposed to bring you in and make you feel like you are in its world. And him bringing his own coat from home as an actor to use as this character, just amazing. Flat out amazing. Any other notes from you, sir, on Ransom for a Dead Man?
Well, I do think it's interesting that, like, that line about the chili also involves imagination, that he, the chef gives him a hard time for not having imagination, and that comes back in the final conversation with Ms. Williams, where, like, he chides her for not having imagination.
Yeah.
And it's he uses another person to help him crack the case. He uses the stepdaughter to, like, manipulate her into, you know, getting, because the whole thing was she kept the money. She hid it. But she couldn't really spend it because they never actually say this, but presumably the FBI had kept track of the serial numbers or something. They knew, because that's what they used to do back in the day. So, like, she couldn't spend the money.
Yeah.
So the whole thing was she had to, like, he had to get her to expose the money. So he used the stepdaughter, and his whole thing is you don't have the imagination to think that people would care more about other things than just money. So the stepdaughter's like, well, if you just pay me off, I'll go away and leave you alone.
Yep.
That's how they get her, which is another. Yep. And this one, you should be happy. The cops, he goes, read her rights and take her away. So the cops take her away.
The cops take her away. Yeah.
She doesn't get away. Like, she doesn't get away like the guy from the last one.
Yeah, exactly. That's so cool. Now, I thought this isn't the same person, but I saw the name Richard O'Brien in the cast for the priest that was in this.
Even notice?
No. I'm just going through the cast list on IMDb for this episode to see if I notice any actors' names, actors or actresses, to see. And I noticed the name Richard O'Brien, aka Ritz O'Brien, but it's not the same. It's not Ritz O'Brien. It's somebody completely different. But
are you talking about the guy from Rocky Horror?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it could have been the guy had a life before Rocky. Like, that's the funny thing about these things is people have lives before the thing that they're known for, you know?
Yes, but
and you're saying he's not. That's it, but it's a common name too. It's Richard
O'Brien.
When did
Rocky Horror come out?
Late 70s, I believe. Okay,
this Richard O'Brien died in March of 83, and the only reason why I know it's not the Rocky Horror Ritz O'Brien is because Ritz O'Brien is the voice of Mr. Fletcher in Phineas and Ferb, Ferb's dad in the cartoon. But this, really? Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yep.
Neat. Like I said, like, people have lives before the things that they do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I absolutely love the Patricia Maddock, who played Margaret. I think she was a great actress. I don't think she's still working. Last role was the Walter Ego in 1991. But she's still with us. She was in Mike. One episode of Trapper John M.D. in 1970.
Mike.
What?
Mike. What? That movie came out when I was – that show came out when I was born.
What?
I am 53 years old. So take her and add 53 years to her life. I'm, you know, I'm not saying she should be dead, but like –
Well, yeah, what I'm saying is, like, most of the, like, IMDb or Wikipedia will say, they will note if the person is not, if the person is gone.
I don't think most people in that episode are still doing things.
You never know.
In 2024.
Well, I'm not saying, but, like, Falk did stuff up until he died. Like, you know, I mean, you never know. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I get that, but, like... When was that? That was probably not that long. I mean,
I'd have to open up the other tab again. But yeah,
2011.
Yeah, he died. Yeah, so that's what I'm saying.
So about 13 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. You're not getting my point at all. Which okay. is the show was made in an enormously long time ago, an ocean of like, yeah, it is like being in a different world in a lot of. Mm-hmm. And part of it also, you know, as I said in the other episode, some of it I think is the whole class issue I think is important because, again, the average American viewer is watching these wealthy, elite people, a life, you know, in the 80s it was lifestyles of the rich and famous was the big thing. You watch people who have better lives than you and have all these amazing things. And in this one it's this elite world that you'll never get to be in. And, of course, you know, they're bad people and they do bad things and they get punished. Which is, mm-hmm. you know, makes you feel better. And it's like the reverse of that thing from the holiday special where you watch people on Tatooine and feel better about your crummy lives, you know. But it is. It's supposed to be the Hollywood, you know, California elite.
Yeah.
And you glimpse into their world. And, you know, I think that is a thing. I think that is another thing that makes Columbo different than all the other ones, you know, that came after. Mm-hmm. Like Murder, She Wrote. Like even Diagnosis Murder. Mm-hmm. Because Diagnosis Murder is whoever comes into the hospital, you know.
Yep.
Murder, She Wrote is whoever Angela goes and visits. Yep. Jessica goes and visits, you know.
Yep.
But this was like there was always this element of class and yep. elitism. So you're like a glimpse into this amazing world. And then, you know. And then the shaggy little dog from I think they established that this character did come from New York originally. I think mm-hmm. at some point they say that. It was this transplant and this alien in this strange world, and he just kind of barges into these situations and disrupts everything. And so far, we haven't got. You need to do a foot tracker too, because there's going to be a foot. He's going to ask about shoes constantly. Where'd you get them shoes?
Oh, yeah,
that is a thing that happens a lot. Where'd you get them shoes?
Yeah, I don't know if I'll have a shoe tracker, but
well, then we lose the Quentin Tarantino audience.
Did we even have a Quentin Tarantino audience? Well,
we don't now. Not with that attitude.
I don't. That's what I'm saying. I don't know. But no, Ransom for a Dead Man. Absolutely. I loved this one. I thought this one was really great. Again, folks, you can watch all of these on Tubi. Did the show keep your interest throughout? Yes. Are you itching to watch the next episode now? Yes.
Yes.
Would you recommend this show to people? Of course. Like, if you like detective stuff, this is classic noir type. Not full-on
no,
noir.
It's not noir at all.
It's close.
No, it's not.
It's adjacent.
No.
Yes, it is.
Oh.
Stop breaking your brain.
I'm not breaking my brain. I just... Mm-hmm. I'm an English major, and I watch films, and I know things. Words okay. have meanings.
Crime drama there. Are you happy now?
Yeah, noir is not crime drama. Noir is a whole thing. It's got a whole attitude, yeah. a whole... Whatever. Yes. Whatever. Mm-hmm. Don't make me taunt you a second time.
Go get your bride, princess. Overall, for this one, 0 to 5 with half points, I think I almost want to give this a 5.
Hmm. Okay, cool. I'm probably going to give it another 4. I liked it a lot. I know there are ones that I like better that I know are coming. It's one of those, like, when we were doing the Star Wars ones and it was like there were a couple early ones, I was like, I can't give it a 5 because these things are coming up. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, yeah. Like, you can't undermine the validity of the rating by, like, giving everything a 5. So So it's a good episode. It's a fun episode. There are more amazing things to come. But four is a solid. Like four is a solid rating, right?
Oh yeah. Four is still positive. Absolutely.
On that, but I'm positive. Like it's good, right?
Yeah. It's actually really good. Okay. Or no, it's where is it? Hold on.
I don't know.
Yeah. Really good. High quality fun. There are some issues, but they won't ruin your experience.
I wouldn't even say there are issues. It's just that there. But I'm saying, I'm just qualifying my thing. I wouldn't say there are issues. I just think that there's it hits higher notes down the road.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this one. We're going to take a quick podcast ad break, and we're going to come back to close the show right after this.
You see, it's like this. This is not just a kidnapping. This is a murder now. And I kind of figure that's my department.
Hello, geeks and geekettes. Looking for a podcast that covers a vast array of topics? Then check out Altered Geek Unleashed, where we discuss our thoughts on this week's geeky news, tech, gaming, television shows, movies, cartoons, comics, and more. So, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks, every Friday on the Geekcast Radio Network.
Grab your helmets, because it's time to assemble Mask. Mask Mayhem is here with your hosts TFG and Mike, Optimus Solo, and brand new host Toon Master Tim. This podcast, covering all 75 episodes of Mask, will feature in-depth analysis of every episode, talk on the toys, and more. Mask Mayhem will run 30 podcast episodes. You can find us on iTunes and www.geekcastradio.com. So get your spectrums ready, as podcasting is the ultimate weapon.
Hi, welcome to Up Nerd. What is Up Nerd? Up Nerd is a podcasting network of shows hosted by me, The Uneven Flow. People have told me I like to talk at them about a pretty wide range of topics, comics, games, movies, books, whatever. And now I'll be able to talk at you. Along with the weekly show will be two bi-weekly shows. First, we have Fine You Pick, a show where one host picks a movie, then both hosts have to watch it. Then the next episode, the other host picks the movie. Each show will have a breakdown of why it is that movie was picked by that host, after which will be a discussion about what it is we just watched. Lastly, we have the show Top 3, Bottom 3. Similarly to Fine You Pick, one host picks a television series, and the next week, the pick alternates to the other host. Here, the episodes of the show are chosen by the top 3 episodes and the bottom 3 episodes, as rated on IMDb.com. Yes, this is probably the worst way to watch and review a television show, and yes, that's the idea. On our shows, I'll detail out how you can suggest things for us to watch, you can reach out and talk with the hosts, and maybe even appear on an episode. I hope you'll join me for this exciting new podcast adventure. I swear we're going to make it more than 8 episodes.
And now, through the magic of the Cybernet Space Cube, the computer repeats stories of the Transformers. Transformers Generation 2.
Wrong. This is not Generation 2. This is Generation 1, done right.
The year will be 2014, and from secret staging grounds on two of Cybertron's moons, the Valiant podcasters prepare to reclaim their reputations. September 17th, 2014, the TFG2 podcast premieres 45 podcast episodes dedicated to all 98 episodes of the Generation 1 cartoon, plus so much more than meets the ear. Join TFG1 Mike, Pecan Court Michael, Optimus Solo, and sometimes Steve Megatron, as they redo TFG1 and get it done right. You can find the TFG2 podcast on www.geekcastradio.com and iTunes.
We shall rise again.
Kid?
Yes?
Shut up.
Beyond the Night is the GCRN's latest review podcast. We are covering everything in the Knight Rider television universe. From the classic 80s TV series to the 1991 reunion film, Team Knight Rider, and the 2008 relaunch series as well. So join TFG and Mike and Dion the Music Man as they go in-depth in Beyond the Night, only on Geekcast Radio Network. You can find Beyond the Night in iTunes and on www.geekcastradio.com.
Ticket.
Yes, Michael.
Just keep driving.
Discover a world of vintage and modern toys that's more than meets the eye with the Triple Takeover Toycast.
Hosted by toy writers and photographers Toy Box Soapbox, 6-0, and TF Square One, this informal and chilled out series of discussions cover everything from vintage Transformers to Mask, Diaclone, Microman and more, be it nostalgic or current.
Whether you're a seasoned collector or a casual robot enthusiast, all are welcome.
Triple Takeover Toycast.
On the Simplistic Reviews podcast, we talk movies. We talk TV. We talk...
Hello, Julie, what the heck are you doing?
Trying to make our spots sound more exciting by adding explosions.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could have got the point across with sound effects, not the real thing.
Car. Download the show on iTunes or at simplisticreviews.blogspot.com.
I'm sure your insurance company will cover that.
No, they won't.
No, they probably won't.
Besides, how could she do it? What would she do? Involve some other people? That would be very risky, wouldn't it? No, you see, the only possible way would be... No, that's crazy.
What is it?
No, it just occurred to me that the only possible way would be if somehow there never was a kidnapping.
She killed him. Then set it up to look that way.
Oh, no, I never said that. I mean, that's a crazy idea. I mean, forget that idea.
Lieutenant, how do you go about proving something like that?
Oh, goodness, I don't know how to do that. Listen, I think you got a crazy idea there. I think you ought to forget about it.
All right, folks, we are back with the Ransom for a Dead Man, Columbo. We will be beginning the series proper after these pilots, so tomorrow will be the actual full beginning of the actual season one kind of stuff, even though I've said Prescription Murder and Ransom for a Dead Man are season one.
It's messy. Like I'm probably being a little nitpicky about it, but it's messy.
Yeah, so the way I'm looking at these is, number one, the way Tubi has them laid out, because it's easy to watch, just watch them in order, because they have them in... number in series order. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, blah, 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 whatever. That's the way I'm looking at it for everything.
Like I said, the DVDs back you up on that. But they also kind of make a point that the first few episodes are kind of...
They're special. They're very special. Any other final thoughts from you before I run through the closing, sir?
I am just looking, we still haven't gotten the Peugeot, and we still haven't gotten the dog yet, so I'm kind of excited for the first sightings, you know?
No, we got the car. Barely.
Did we get the car?
When he's in the lot. When she goes to leave.
There was something that kind of looked like the Peugeot. He
was standing by the car. He was standing by supposedly his car, I'm assuming. I think.
I mean, you'll know it when you see it. It's
well,
French.
Yeah, obviously.
It's French. But,
yeah.
Dude, that's the whole thing. It's like the shittiest car that France ever produced, and like the joke is that he's proud of it. He loves it because it's French.
It's French. That's right. Absolutely. I might. I don't think I could speak it. I would have to. I'm not doing. No, I was almost going to say, maybe I'll do the entire intro next episode in French, but I'm not. I don't think I could do that.
I don't even know if the Peugeot is in it, so.
No, that's true. Any other final thoughts?
No, it's a good episode. She's a good antagonist. I think that's another thing we need to sort of start keeping track of is the quality of the antagonists, because they are they're the main focus of the episode, like up until Columbo shows up. I think she's a good antagonist. The weird thing is she's as sociopathic as Ray was in the first episode, but she doesn't come across as sociopathic. It's weird. Like she seems very personable. And I remember in the very beginning when she's doing her case, her legal case, and she wins a case for her insurance company and the building, but she tells them, you know, your building is lit very poorly and you need to fix that. And I'm like, oh, maybe she's not completely evil. You know, like it's because there will be antagonists who are actually very sympathetic. That will be a thing. There is an episode where one of them says, I wish, because she's avenging a murder.
Right.
I wish you had investigated that murder instead of the one that I committed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he actually gives a speech about, like, I'll send you the thing, because there's this channel that does music videos based on Columbo episodes, which I love.
Wow.
I'll send you the one. But anyway, yeah, like, so I think she's a strong antagonist. I don't know that she's one of the best antagonists, but she's just, because the other guy came across as like just a complete reptile.
Yeah.
Actually, the end. Because he just never broke. He never had.
No.
He was always the same level.
Yeah.
Where she does have highs and lows, and she does seem very human. And she has moments where she seems like a good person, but at the end, she thinks that everybody is as greedy as she is, and she gets caught that way.
Yep. Absolutely. All right, folks. Thank you for joining us here inside Studio 2009. If you'd like to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show, there are several ways to do so. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can listen to, comment on all the content, as well as checking out the brand new GCRN store. You can get, and I love this, is a cool idea, a GCRN glass pop can. So it's basically a pop, it's a glass, but it's in the shape of a soda can with our logo on it. Yeah. We've got mugs, we've got shirts, we've got all kinds of stuff, and we're adding stuff as we go here. But we got a brand new store, so check that out over on geekcastradio.com. You can send any email to feedback@geekcastradio.com. You can check us out on all the podcatching clients out there. If you're Apple users, it's Apple Music. If you're Android users, it's Spotify. At least that's the one I use most of the time. You can follow us on Twitter @GeekCastRadio for the network, @ItsStudio2009 for the show. I'm @TFU and Mike. Dave doesn't do social media.
Oh, if you really need to say something, say it to Mike. Mike will let me know.
Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/GeekCastRadioNetwork and also check out Studio 2009 podcast over there as well. Join us next time when Dave and I will be talking about season 1, episode 3, Murder by the Book. For now,
that is a sub theme of Columbo episodes, are killer authors.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I love it. It's awesome. That one is going to be so fun to discuss, because damn. For now, I'm TFG and Mike with
David Draper.
You'll hear us back in the studio soon.
Yeah, after all that, I almost forgot to say it. Goodbye, Mrs. Wheat.
Goodbye, Lieutenant.